The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
So, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And we're going to have a really good show today. Let me see if my guests are mic'd up okay. James Alalem, say aloha.
Aloha, everybody.
He's here. And you're it today, kind of specifically, I'm inviting you in because of your involvement in Kingdom of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And then Keo Kauihana. Let's see if you're mic'd up right.
Aloha, Felicia.
That's right. Okay, good. And you're involved with the reinstated Hawaiian government.
Yes, I'm a national. I'm just a citizen. Nothing, no office. I don't hold any office. I'm just a citizen.
Okay, and then so today, like, this show is certainly about Kanaka Maoli issues, but it's really about all of us. And it's understanding what's coming up and having your help in when I look at the internet and the newspaper and things like that, I see stuff I don't really understand about, like, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs shifting to something called AHA. And, you know, it's talking about a nation within a nation. I know that there was the roll call that was coming out, and I don't know enough. It just sort of makes me nervous. I'll be honest. I don't trust a lot of things that sound good on the outside. It seems like collectively we've been sold a lot of information that isn't correct, and with having nothing to do with nationhood of Hawaii just on any issue. So we're going to have different callers call in today, too, like another group that will have probably a few calls in the next couple hours is Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice, because they're kind of looking at parallel issues at a global and a national level. If I could say that at some level, it's like Hawaii is an occupied nation within an occupied nation, because humanity is kind of going through very similar struggles, and there's a whole lot more similarities behind all of our issues and needs than there are differences. And after 5 o'clock, Poka Lainui, do you guys know him? That's Hayden Burgess. He was going to call in from Oahu and share a little bit about what's coming up with the Native Hawaiian Convention, and he had some interesting insights too. We may also get a call in from my 15-year-old friend who's spending a week at the legislature, and she's been talking to Tulsi Gabbard and all the different senators and House of Representatives folks trying to get a bill pushed through. So she might call closer to 5 o'clock and give us an on-the-spot report. So with that said, and the listener knows what we're talking about, I would like to start with you, KO, because this is the first time I've had you in the studio, and I want you to be able to share your mana'o from wherever your heart is taking you right at this point. But know that, like, when you're talking to me, I'm a relatively beginner on the topic, and probably many of the listeners are also. So what's your thoughts?
Well, for many years now, I've understood that what was taken away from us was our form of government.
Us being Hawaiian people.
Yes, the Hawaiian.
Native Hawaiian
the
people.
The Kanaka, okay? And that's another thing is that our race is called Kanaka Maoli, okay? It's not Hawaiian. Hawaiian is everybody that lives in Hawaii.
So I'm kind of Hawaiian.
Yeah, you're Hawaiian. Everybody
James is.
That lives in Hawaii is Hawaiian. But the natives are Kanaka Maoli. Okay, and so I came down here today to talk about the Kanaka Maoli. Because according to the state, they don't exist. They're in history books. And yet, here we are walking around, you know, finally starting our government and seeking recognition. The state is denying that. I'm really upset about that, because we're in court now defending ourselves when we use our license plates and driver's license. Okay, now, this was a legislative process that was done in the Hawaiian government that the judges are not accepting. Yeah, so I'm real frustrated about that.
And this legislative process, when did it happen?
I don't know the right...
I mean, is it pretty recently? Is it like
it's
talking...
It's like about 5 years ago.
Okay, so we're talking recent past. Because as I've studied this issue, which I guess I never really studied it very hard till I was on the show, getting a lot of calls in, and then also the Public Land Development Corporation really hit a nerve for me. I felt like it was a second overthrow. I wasn't around for the first, wasn't going to stand quietly by for the second. James, who's in here, I saw him go through a very interesting process of being criminalized for a very simple standing up for his, Iwi Kupuna, the bones. And so these things started causing me to look at it. And then so I just want to say to the listener, I actually have done quite a bit of research. It's hard to hold on to all of it, but when I have seen real documents, it really was stolen, you know, not just in 1893, but in 1959, and by the standards and the rules of the United States of America, how we do our foreign affairs, it wasn't right. So I just want to say it's in the very recent past, I've been able to go, wow, okay, there's something different than how all the rest of the world has somehow been stolen by whoever is the invading force. It is a political piece. So you're helping me to know that there was a 5 year ago, or in the recent history, a new piece of legislation that makes it okay for you to have your own license plates and your own driver's license and is acknowledging the Kingdom of Hawaii. I know. Is that correct? Am I getting that right? Trying to help the listener catch up.
And on Maui, they've done even more. They've made a law that says that they recognize our efforts.
Okay.
And that we have the right to do what we're doing. So they did that in order to avoid human rights charges. Because that's what's on the table now, is that we can prove that our human rights are being violated. Yeah? And so it's pretty interesting that America goes all over the world sharing their democracy, but here in Hawaii, we are, the natives are not recognized.
Well, I have to say, they're sharing their democracy at the point of a gun.
Yeah.
So it, maybe it's not so different. You know, I mean, like how we're sharing democracy, for example, with Iraq or Afghanistan, it probably doesn't feel that democratic.
Yeah, it's you know, this word, democracy, is really a very tricky word. I mean, you think it's good, but it depends how you operate to see how your democracy is taken care of. Kanaka Maolis do not have any democracy in Hawaii. The native here is not recognized.
Help me understand how that is. Like, I know that the Kanaka Maoli do not want to be called a tribe the way that the indigenous Native Americans are being called, right? So that's how the United States government recognizes, say, the Navajos or the Hopis or somebody. There's a resistance to being recognized that way. So which way do you want to be recognized? How would you, I know you're recognized as an American citizen, right? But you're not recognized specifically as an indigenous person.
Being recognized as an American is totally wrong.
Okay.
I never naturalized. I never patronized. I was never, you know, asked to be an American. Okay? They just made me one.
And I'm looking at you and I'm thinking you're born after 1959.
Before.
Okay. So you, even on your birth certificate, it says Territory of Hawaii.
Yes. Yes. And that's all fraud. I mean, that's what it was called back then. But I have no political rights, none in Hawaii. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get our political rights back and recognized as the native here in Hawaii. But the native here in Hawaii are now called Native Hawaiians. I have a problem with that because the definition of Native Hawaiian doesn't make sense. It's like a fictitious person, you know, one of the many races here. I mean, they can't even tell me, give me one race. They said the race is here. And so it's not even identifying me properly as a Native Hawaiian. So I want to pursue Kanaka Maoli as the native here because we need to get our rights back. And the land. Okay, that's the land too. It's very important for the native. Land.
Land, very important, yes. Do you want to take a call yet, or would you, do you want to suggest, I'll take this and I'll see if it's on point and we'll go quickly.
Okay.
Thank you for holding. You are on the air. Could you turn your radio off? Turn your radio off, please.
Oh, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, it kind of happened with the crooks. Those, you know, the big five, those are the guys that instigated the whole team to take over Hawaii. They hired... They got the military people. It was a coup. It was these guys, these business people, coup with the U.S. military, and they forcibly went over and put the queen, you know, in jail. And pretty much took physically the military force, took the land from the Hawaiians. And that is not right. Yeah.
That's right, and both President Grover Cleveland and President Bill Clinton acknowledged that crime and apologized, but then nothing changed.
Yeah, what's hypocritical about it is they want to put their nose in all these other affairs, but then how about what they did in the past? They kind of make right the wrong that they did for the whole Kanaka Maoli. Why is that? And I think we need to, you know, the Hawaiians need to come as one voice and speak them, you know, the manawa about what had happened and not have all these other Hawaiian groups claiming that they're this or they're that. We just have to get all united as one and have one voice. And that it can make, you know, a bigger ripple versus everybody making smaller ripples. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So he brings up something that is, I think, an important element in getting the non-Kanaka Maoli to be able to really understand and support cohesively. I think there are many, many people who understand the injustice. I think there are many, many people who care and want to see things be righted as much as can be. You know, we can't reverse the massive death that happened 200 years ago, like 80 to 90% of the people perished. That can't be undone. But for the people standing outside this issue, when there are so many different groups, it's hard to understand how to support it. So if I understood him correctly, he was saying we need to have one voice. Is that what you heard?
Well, what he mentioned also was the apology bill. Now, the apology bill is very important because it tells you all the crimes that was done against the Kanaka people. It actually has it down there. And it tells also that the land, Hawaii, is all Hawaiian national lands. It has it in the apology bill. So what it is a confession to a crime.
And yet, it hasn't been addressed. And something that I watched, paid a lot of attention to with the Public Land Development Corporation, was how the lands were called crown lands when the territory was established, when there was a provisional government. Then they became called ceded lands. Then it was called public lands. And last year, they just took that adjective out, and they call it lands. So it is a way, in essence, of stealing by words. You know, just like when all of a sudden it's lands. Well, it's not even public lands. And to me, it seems like the Department of Hawaiian Homelands lands, that seems to be being applied in public uses, whether it's power provision or dumps or airports or something. They have been for a long time treated like public lands and not even the ones set aside for the Hawaiians. James, I noticed that you have something in front of you. You're doing your homework here. Do you have something you want to bring in to this and put your face up near the microphone?
Well, yeah, I was appointed by the Hawaiian Kingdom to sit on two boards. One is the Burial Council, and the other one is on a land agent for the Hawaiian Kingdom. And so I was doing a lot of studies on the about the lands. So I had to go dig way back. And there was only two types of lands. And it was government and crown land. Those other lands that people talk about was all created after the overthrow of 1893. That's when they started to make up all these things because, again, the Republic of Hawaii couldn't cede any lands to anybody. Because they had no government. It was illegal. They declared themselves to be the Republic of Hawaii. You know, so how can they cede any lands that don't belong to them?
And the word cede means give away or pass on. Now, the Great Mihele, that happened in 1848. Do I have that year correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and so the Great Mihele was prior to what you're speaking about.
That was all about royal patent.
Okay.
You have to have a royal patent to have any kind of land. Yeah.
Okay. And so now, do you have any statistics for me, like how much Kanaka Maoli are landowners? I think it's kind of a staggering statistic how many are incarcerated.
Yeah.
That seems to be something that happens to young men pretty heavily.
What I would like to speak about is that we're using a foreign constitution here in Hawaii. And I would like for us to be using a Hawaiian constitution. Because with a Hawaiian constitution, you can make Hawaiian laws here in Hawaii for Hawaiians and the Kanaka.
So are you speaking of having a nation within a nation, or because that's what I see that when I look on the newspaper, the Star Advertiser today, and on the OHA site and Hawaii Free Press, what they're giving an opportunity for is a Hawaiian nation, and it seems like that's like a nation within. I grew up in Native American, we call it Indian country then, and they didn't mind that word. So there's the Navajo Nation that spans four states. I think that's what they're saying there. You're saying when you're talking about your laws and your constitutions, you're not talking about parallel reality. You're talking about replacement.
The original. That's
common
the
law.
Original laws.
Common law.
Common law.
Common law. And then so in order to have those common laws working, it's removing the state law and the federal law.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just wanting to be really clear, because for people who are used to this duality in other parts of the United States, they might misinterpret that.
People in Hawaii to start using Hawaiian law. Yeah, that's what I would like to see.
And then where do people access Hawaiian law? I understand about Ahupua'a system, try really hard to do what I can in that direction, try and teach and learn.
We have conventions once a year.
Okay.
And at those conventions, all the legislatures meet and they make the laws of the land.
And people can find that online somewhere?
Yes. It's the Lawful Hawaiian Government.org.
Okay. And so that is...
It has all the legislatures in there. It has their numbers. And people can call them their legislature on their island.
Regardless of their bloodline.
Yes, regardless.
And I have another caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Yes. My feeling about the Hawaiian lands is a big topic here. I remember the first time that I came here in 1986, the islands. I was camping out at, went to Waimea, and a group of locals came over and were kind of looking around, and there was a little bit of a controversy about us being there. And they had been playing baseball, and they came over to our campsite, and they said, you know, this should be for Hawaiians only, you know, that the Haoles stole our land. Well, I said, you know, truth is that, you know, my people, I'm Italian and Mexican. My people didn't steal anything from you. The people that stole your land are still here. See, because I've been coming to the islands my whole life. I know the history. And the history is that the land was stolen by the missionaries. And the Robinsons and the rest of them are still here. And if you want to get your land back, you should go knock on their door. Because they're the ones that stole your land, not me.
Okay.
Because I'm an immigrant as well. And the fact was, it is similar along the lines of what happened in Jamestown with the Native Americans. When the first people came here, they were in good standing with the Native people, and they worked together. But it was their grandchildren, and it was the grandchildren that did the coup. It was the grandchildren of the missionary families that had already established the cane fields and the farming and the things like that, and wanted that takeover. And it was them, the missionary families, the grandsons of those, that did that coup and did that takeover. And the fact is that they're still here. And if you want your land back, then you should talk to them.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
All right. Do you, either one of you men have a response to that?
Oh, they don't want to even want to talk to us. They're just going to ignore us. So how can we talk to them? I can understand why. What he was talking about, you know, that the Hawaiians said this is their land. I mean, they frustrated. I mean, totally.
Well, I mean, I own my house site, and I do look at that complexity of that issue. Yes, I bought it, and yes, this place is Hawaiian land, and so.
You know, there's an exclusion clause on every title. If you read it.
So tell us what that means.
An exclusion clause says that the government is not responsible should your land not be lawful, that the government is not responsible for that.
Right. What I try and really hold in my mind is how it would feel if the same transition happened while I was here. Like if somebody came, like China or something else, we were given to China. And then I went through the same experience that the Kanaka Maoli went through here with a rapid change and everything. It doesn't even matter. How would that feel, right? So, I mean, when I contemplate that, I get the complexity of, well, is it even my home? Whose home is it? You know, and actually, if we look at traditional times, the Maka'ainana, the miscellaneous people, didn't get to own their land either, right? I mean, it was a feudalistic system. And so even when it's called crown lands, that's the elite got the lands, right?
Yeah.
Not the common people.
Well, they were just the caretakers. As long as they take care of the land, they can stay on the land.
Yeah, so it's complex.
Yeah, and it's not about people. It's about law. Law. U.S. Constitution has no business in Hawaii. We didn't invite it over here. There's no treaty. How did the rest of the laws get here? And it tells me that it's very political. That political is an animal here. And it exists, and it's real. And it supersedes law.
Well, many shows in here, there's quite a bit of discussion about what's being commonly called lately the corporatocracy.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, almost a super government. We have this thing coming called the Trans-Pacific Partnership that even steps over the United States government, giving more authority to a business court that's a global market court of three judges. So we are on the precipice of that being signed. And really, all of these are just ideas, right? And only because we give our consent to be governed does it actually happen. But there are guns, right? There are guns. There are enforceable laws with guns, and that does become a problem. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, James Alolem, and K.O. Kauihana.
Kauihana.
Are in the studio with me. I have a couple of callers. Aloha, you are on the air.
Is that me?
Yes, and so I have a bunch lined up. Can you make your point concisely, and if you have a question, ask the question.
Sure. my question is, and I wonder if I'm correct, the Hawaii revised statutes are just the original Hawaiian kingdom law that's just been added on to? Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So it wouldn't be too hard to, like, go back to the root of the Constitution.
No, that's why I keep telling everybody that the Hawaii revised statutes was only revised, and that's why the state of Hawaii is living today, because of the common law that they revised to become the Hawaii revised statutes.
It is called the Hawaii revised statutes, so it is revised
from the common law.
From the common law of Hawaii.
Yeah.
Another thing, or just a statement, is if we can remove ourselves from a credit type economy that's based on the land being as part of our economy, I think that would correct a lot of the problems.
Meaning if private land ownership wasn't central to the economy?
Right. Instead of, like, making land available, like if you build your house and you want to make it nice and sell it to somebody, can do that, but it doesn't seem to make sense in this kind of our economy is really just us here, really, basically, and we're living off of a kind of a implemented economy that's supplied from all of the big machine, right? So if we don't have that, then we're going to be reduced to just us here, and there's no need to really move around and live like that. So that's kind of like a Disneyland kind of concept to apply here. And then if we can remove our land being able to be sold or bartered out from under us, then we can maintain, if we want to trade with somebody, fine, but no need to sell your land. Then you're off of it. You're gone. And the company store and the credit system allows that to happen. And people don't know how to manage money, all of us. But some people that don't know how to manage money have really big gifts, you know, so... We shouldn't allow them a situation for someone to be bamboozled out of their land.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. You guys have feedback on that, or do you want the next caller?
Well, the lands is not supposed to be bought because it's all royal patent. Any lands after 1893 is not supposed to be sold or bought. If the LCAs, they talk about land commission awards, if all the people that was given the land commission awards by the royal patent and they don't have any heirs, it goes back to the government. It doesn't go passed on to anybody. So because now you have to have the deeds and the royal patents to say that you own these lands. The state and county don't own the land. The United States has this land illegally ceded to them. It's also the sovereignty of Hawaii ceded to them was illegal, totally illegal.
I did have Dr. Keanu Sai on the show here, and he has a pretty good case that he puts forward on looking at these land issues. I've also had realtors from Hawaii Island call in who have just done title searches on properties, and they were kind of stunned and shocked and horrified to really look at the title, how people were forced off the land, even sometimes burned off the land, kicked off the island, they moved to other islands. That they're, you know, I've had people call in and really legitimize the claims that aren't from within the culture and who aren't even necessarily sympathetic to the culture, just have a strong sense of right and wrong and say, oh, that wasn't... right.
Just like Oha, Kainoa, all those people was all creation of the illegal state of Hawaii. And so, you know, to say that they're going to speak to us and become a nation within a nation, I mean, who are they trying to fool here?
And if anybody is really Akamai on that element or feels good about the roll call, I really encourage you to call in and share your perspective on it, because that helps us with the discussion. I don't have a solid enough understanding to really balance that well. I have another caller. Aloha, you are on the air. Thank you for holding.
Yes, I wanted to address something that the second to the last caller mentioned. And I believe your guests in the studio mentioned. And in order to do that, I'm going to do a super quick history lesson, okay?
Okay.
All right. The King Kamehameha II kidnapped King Kaumualii and spirited him away from Kauai. Kaumualii's son, George Humehume, came back from the mainland, attempted a revolt, and was hunted down and slaughtered by Kamehameha's army right outside Hanapipi Lookout. After that, they spirited away many of the Kauai traditional chiefs, and the lands were divided up and given to relatives of the Kamehameha family. Now we go to Kalakaua, who, by all accounts, won his election in a fraudulent manner. We need not go too deep into that, but there was almost a war over the election results. And here we have Kalakaua in power, and the Sinclairs come over from New Zealand. They look around, and they buy the island of Niihau from Kalakaua. They pay Kalakaua $10,000 in gold coin. This is somewhere around 1865 or something, or 1875. They pay Kalakaua $10,000 in gold for the island of Niihau. When they find out that Niihau is dry, they look to the Ahupua'a of Makawele, which goes from Waimea River all the way over to Hanapepe, and it is owned by a chiefess, a woman, a Kamehameha descendant, and they pay her in gold for the title to that land. The Robinsons did not steal any land. They paid the lawful Hawaiian government at that time, the Kingdom of Hawaii, they paid them in gold for their land. So if you're going to be blaming people for stealing land, please don't include the Robinsons in it. My father worked for the Robinsons. He was born in Pocala Camp. My family came here in 1876. They were citizens of the Kingdom of Hawaii, and they became citizens of the Republic of Hawaii, and then they became citizens of the Territory of Hawaii. And nothing that the Robinsons did was illegal. They got their land in a fair manner, you know, under the laws of the time. So please keep that in mind when accusations get thrown around. If you want people to seriously follow your cause, it's very offensive to hear lies being spread.
Well,
thank you for your time.
Okay, and thank you for that piece of history, because with the caller who was speaking on the Robinsons, I have no history to be able to speak to that one way or another. But he brings up a really important point. And so when people in history did things that weren't the right choice, and then we're here in the present, you know, how do we make that work out? Not in this case, I'm not speaking about the Robinsons' purchase. When I look at the story of Kamehameha I, I think he kind of sold his people out in a way, right? I don't mean to offend people when I say that, but when I look at that, I think, why did he work people so hard? Why did he trade for guns and for ships? Why did he go and attack these other places? You look at Samoa or Tonga or Fiji. These other places didn't have the die-off. And when I try and study what did happen, it seemed like there was disease, but people were worked to death. People were starved to death. You know, there wasn't unity. That's my interpretation of history. Welcome people to correct me on that, but it seemed like we venerate this leader, but maybe there was poor choices being made in terms of the health of the the Hawaiian people. And so how do we rectify that later? I know when I look at, try to look at the history of Kilauea, where I live, and who lived where and what up on the flat plateau, it seems like the passing away of most of the Kanaka Maoli that lived there happened almost even prior to the sugar fields being put there. I see the rock work in the Ahupua'as down there, but I don't see hardly anything up on the flat. Maybe it's all been moved away, but I can't even find what happened. I try really look. What is the story behind my land where I live? And people died, and that was awful. And then how do we move forward? And what do we do? And also in response to that caller, when I say, well, the whole world was stolen, like if I look at my island nation, right, Sicily, that's been one takeover after another. That's like almost like an aircraft carrier out there in the Mediterranean. So one people group, another, you know, Ireland, even England has been taken over and over and over and over again. So there is this process that happens. And so that's when I say the whole world has been stolen from somebody. It doesn't make it right, but it does make it how things happen. So I'm looking at how do we make things better?
I don't know. We're trying.
We're trying. And yeah. So I'm acknowledging that there's a lot of important things underway.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, I would like to see the Hawaiian Constitution be the laws of the land again. And that being like that would half our problems would be solved. You know, about discrimination, land issues, land usage. Yeah, that would all be solved with Hawaiian laws.
Okay, and we have my satellite reporter, Talia Abrams, on the phone from the legislature. She's my teenage friend, not meaning to overemphasize your age, but Talia, I am proud of you. You're over there in Honolulu. Can you tell us what you're learning this week and how's your bill doing?
It's doing okay.
Tell us what the bill is. Tell us who you've spoken to.
The bill is for edible landscapes in public areas for public use.
So that's planting food in parks and along areas so anybody can have access to it. So it made it through the House unopposed.
Now
which
in
is
the Senate.
Now in the Senate. So tell me what you've done.
So at first it was having a hard time getting scheduled a hearing. But right now it has just got a hearing. And it's on Thursday at 3:30.
So if I wanted to support your bill, it's probably a good idea for me to do that between now and Thursday?
Definitely, as soon as possible.
And who helped you get that in there? Give credit where it goes. Did anybody help you in particular?
Yes, I had many people help me, and a couple of them were Derek Hall, Tommy. Well, of course, he helped me through the House, Ron Kochi.
Senator Ron Kochi from
yes.
Kauai, okay.
Senator Ron Kochi. And Mayor Carvalho.
Good. So you got a good team.
Yes.
All right. And so what is it doing on Thursday? That's going through the Ways and Means, or what group is it?
Going through Water and Land, joined with Public Safety and Military Affairs.
Really? Military Affairs. Okay. Oh, Public Safety and Military Affairs. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also met with Tulsi Gabbard yesterday?
I did. He gave me a really nice award.
Award from the House of Representatives?
The United States Congress.
Okay, what does your award say?
The United States Congress and U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard hereby recognize Talia Abrams for being a woman of character, courage, and commitment.
Right on.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really exciting.
That is really exciting. And so I'm glad that she's helping. And she's coming over to Kauai on Wednesday, yes?
I don't don't know.
I'm pretty sure she is, and she's meeting with different people, and she's got a women's meeting, I think, like around 5 or 6, if there's an Akamai caller that knows when that is. And this is Felicia's perspective with respect to the Hawaiian nation. Still yet, we have this duality. We have two layers of government. We have the Hawaiian government, and we have the Hawaii state government, the county government, and the federal government. And it's my way of working with things is that I just parallel work. And there are many good people who do run for office. There are many good people who do try and make things right. And I appreciate that you're learning stuff over there, and you are making a difference, Talia. Feeding people healthy food is a great thing, and getting people in the habit of reclaiming food in the public areas, which is very much in alignment. This show is really looking at Hawaiian nationhood and what has been common law in Hawaii, and certainly having sustainable food available for people, that's pretty much in alignment with the history here, right? We didn't have to, they're nodding their heads. So you are at like a teen camp over there, a government camp?
Yeah, a government camp.
And what's it called?
It's called Teen Pack.
And you're learning a lot?
Yeah. Our guest speaker today was Derek Awakami, so that was really cool.
Good. Well, I'm really glad that you're making a difference. And if statewide, or I don't even want to use that word, if across the island chain and around here everybody has a little bit more access to food, I'm very happy for that. And I'm really thankful that Mayor Carvalho got into helping you with this. And you met with him last Friday, too, right?
Yeah, I met with him on Thursday.
Thursday. And so what was the outcome of that?
He was very supportive of the bill, and he wants to help by making county land also available for my bills. So that's really exciting. I'm so excited. It's crazy.
Yay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So thank you for your report. And I say keep up the charge. You got a Facebook and everything else to try and build your support. You're learning what you're doing. So keep us all in the loop and let us know how we can help you. Okay, thank you so much.
Of course, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And you've been holding. Thank you so much. You're on the air.
How's it? This is Kobika from Anahola. How's it, Kauihana? How's it, Jimbo?
Hello.
Hello, brother. I just wanted to reiterate something, too, that every land deal ever since overthrow is illegal because they made their own banks and made their own deeds. So I agree with the foundations that you guys say, that pretty much everything's illegal.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to say you guys do good work. Keep up the good work.
You do good work too, Brother Kavika.
I'm trying to.
And is this
wanted to encourage both of you.
And Kavika, is this the Kavika that I invited into the studio also?
So
are you going to come in?
Probably on a Tuesday. Probably on Tuesday. I'll talk to Larry and then, I'll come in.
Yeah, because that's what this show is about, is getting different people with strong mana'o to be able to come in and actually voice it. It is the show of the people, and we try and get many, many people in, and your community is one who I think has a very, very important voice, that the more people hear it, the more other people will start to understand that it's a very valid position, and so things will shift as people wake up.
I think you know what the caller said about Robinson is true. Those my tutu knows Robinson, and they did buy the island of Niihau. I don't know the circumstances behind the purchase and stuff, but it was done under the Kingdom of Hawaii's laws at the time. The people, you know, they talk about people who stole land. The main part that I see is they forgot God and went after the dollar and forgot the God that they serve. When they came to bring the gospel, they forgot the message. And then, like anybody who's backslidden or falls away, the message tends to be twisted, and then it comes about power and greed. And that's what happened with their descendants. And I'm not saying all of them, because there were some good missionary descendants, too. But that's just all I had to say today. And I just want to say thank you for your show. Mahalo.
Okay, yeah. Mahalo.
Okay.
Hey, ahui ho. Thank you. Mahalo.
So, James, I see you keep looking at your paperwork in front of you. What do you got on your mind?
Well, as a burial council, I'm trying to start up here. You know, I have this paper in front of my hand, and this says here, therefore, the legislator, legislators, in 1990, through the Act of 306, reaffirmed the common law rule. So they know about the common rule that's supposed to be in Hawaii. They only use it. They only use it for their own benefit when they want to. But in reality, all us national people supposed to be under and only common rule in Hawaii, common law.
So only the national people, or would that be me as well, who is born in Colorado? You know, so I can't make the claim that Kale can. I was born American.
Well, what it says is the nationals and the people that is born in Hawaii, so, you know, that never give up their citizenships. We're all nationals. People that is born in Hawaii belongs to the Hawaiian kingdom because the state of Hawaii illegally came here and became a state illegally. And so that finally we're telling everybody that we're nationals, we're not part of America. And so on that long fight that we had, finally, in, let's see, right here, it's stated here, that we was recognized as Hawaiian nationals that cleared the committee as a resolution. And I have it right here in my hands. And that was House Resolution 68 formally recognized the rights of the Hawaiian nationals, defining the documents as authentic heirs, beneficiaries, and the body politics of a Hawaiian kingdom to recognize and restore their national government in Hawaii.
And what year is that?
Let me see if I can find it for you.
Is that a recent ruling?
Yeah. It's this one is Act 195, Session Laws, and the House of the Laws of Hawaii, 2011.
Okay, so yeah. We keep getting things moved forward on that, and so... But OHA and AHA are different than supporting that law, or is that part of what I'm still a little bit confused on that. I think the caller, Polka, who's calling in after 5, he seemed to be pretty clear on it. I told him, wait for the show. Don't explain it to me before the show. Explain it to everybody. So we're going to be getting a little bit more clarification on that. How do you envision things? I'm looking at KO right now. How do you envision things? I don't sense from you a lot of anger at all towards me or towards a lot of people. Like, how do you envision a change happening? We see decolonization going on in places like Crete and Cyprus, and eventually it happened in the Philippines. Some places have been colonized for hundreds of years. And they do decolonize. That's what you're hoping for. Is that correct, decolonization?
Yes, yes. When I seen the GMO protests, I like that because they support good stewardship.
And it was a whole wide range of people.
Yeah, and so I support them. And they would be good for the Hawaiian government, that process of doing agriculture. It would be good for the Hawaiian people.
Like permaculture kind.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, that's all good foods.
Good foods. We just had a really great event for a couple of, almost a couple of months going on here, really trying to build and instill permaculture. I want to support what you're saying, too, on this GMO movement or stopping the pesticide issue is how much it's really brought a lot of us together. And I'm not going to name names, but I'm giving a shout out to my West Side friends who came up and just
they did real good. The judge agreed with their situation, and that the landowners are responsible for all the drifts, pesticide drifts, the landowners.
And I have to say I really agreed with the judge in that case, because like before they said, okay, the landowners aren't responsible, because the landowners had no way of knowing really what was meant by the extent of this agriculture study. I mean, with the GMOs, because it was brand new. But now when they've renewed the leases, they're saying, well, guess what? You are responsible because you do
know.
And
you know what? I think that law helped make the judge have that decision.
What, the 960 ordinance?
Yes.
I think the mobilization to get, I reckon maybe 5,000 people have gone out and stood out and mobilized on this issue, not all at one time, but many, many different people. And I guess what I was just going to say, too, with these West Side Friends, they just came up and put that wet mop on my roof, helped me to patch the holes in my roof. That's such a big thing. It's such a kind gesture, and I never even asked them to do that. They just came up out of the goodness of their heart and helped me out. They know I'm kind of struggling. Came and did a nice thing, and a year ago, I didn't hardly know anybody on the West Side.
You know, we need a government to support those people, you know, because they did it on their own. Now, just think if they had a government supporting them, everybody would be taken care of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And what I'm also excited about, and I'm hoping that the West Side is really able to receive it, and the existing government, is looking at ways of bioremediating its toxic areas, like where the poison houses were. Got some amazing people in the permaculture world who are willing to come over and try and clean up that poison, work on it, because that's really when it comes down to, we have to start growing our own food, we have to start taking care of our land, and when the rubber hits the road, you need the government, but you also need people who become less dependent on the flow of the corporatocracy and more dependent on each other.
Yes.
Like, localized in the community, helping each other, not living independently of each other. And I'm all excited because I think it's actually really happening. I feel like I've been seeing it happening. And
well, in the Hawaiian Kingdom laws, we have a law that says, states that you can open markets, have open markets, and start vending.
How about currency?
We don't have any currency now, no.
But I mean, like,
it's on the table.
On the table, like, because the more we get separated from the economy that has become a global economy, the more you're able to have a strengthened local economy. Because it's when you look at the story behind our dollar bill through the Federal Reserve, it's like a game of musical chairs. There's always going to be a loser because it starts asking for interest the minute it goes out, the minute it's created. It didn't exist. It gets created, and then it's got this cycle of debt. Every bill represents debt. It doesn't represent an asset. It represents a liability, and it's a really weird paradigm to be setting economy on, is everybody's got to owe somebody something to have anything. So we have a debt-based economy. And
Federal Reserve, we should get rid of them. They have no oversight. And it's not necessary what they're doing. We don't really need them. And yet they're so part of the economy that they're running America broke.
And then when we talk about an occupied nation within an occupied nation, that's the occupiers. That level of a global economy, the way the currency is managed, It in this debt-based world, it is crippling to all of us in a way that we're not even aware of. It's like the calendar. The Hawaiian calendar tells you how to live, how to plant, how to fish. It's really synchronized with the natural environment. The Gregorian calendar, the Monday through Sunday, is synchronized to something completely different. And we have a calendar that conditions us to a work week or a week that is got almost nothing to do with nature. So it's separated from nature, where the Hawaiian calendar was integrated with nature, and our economic system, which we don't even consider, we don't even think about, we just accept as a central piece of what is normal, you know, that undermines a lot of our ability to have individual sovereignty, not even just Hawaiian sovereignty. So is that a piece yet that is in the Hawaiian government laws? Is anything dealing with the currencies?
Eventually, we will address that. But right now, we don't need any more distractions. Yeah, I believe that we're on our way to the world court, because the courts here in Hawaii are corrupt. You know, they will never acknowledge a Hawaiian government. Yeah. So
you are listening to Kauai Soapbox Live. This is Felicia in the studio with me. Is K.O. Kauihana. Sorry, I'm struggling with that. It's an easy name, but I'm struggling. I haven't said it enough times. And James Olalem. And Kauai Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Bali High Realty, Anahola Prince Kohio, Aya's Garden, and Al Pastor Tacos. So KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Hale Iwa.
Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Kahale Pono presents the 4th Annual Anahola Prince Kohio Day Celebration at Anahola Beach Park Saturday, March 29th from 11 to 5. We honor the past and embrace the future by sharing the legacy of Prince Kuhio and celebrating the late kupuna William Lim for his exceptional cultural contributions in the Anahola community. This family event offers educational, health and wellness exhibits, local food booths, and of course, live, local Hawaiian entertainment. For more information, contact La Contratus by emailing kahalepono@gmail.com or call 639-1754.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. This is Felicia. So very soon, Poka La'anui is going to be calling in, and I really want to be hearing his mana'o on the Native Hawaiian Convention, and I might have him on the phone right now. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yes, aloha, Felicia.
Yes.
This is Poka La'anui. I'm calling in from Oahu.
Perfect. So tell the listener a little bit about yourself, and then we want to even, yeah, tell, and I, yes. Start with that.
Okay, if I'm not speaking loud enough.
Please speak louder.
Okay, let me try. First of all, I've been known by the name Hayden Burgess as well as Poka La'anui. I am currently executive director of the Waianae Coast Community Mental Health Center, and I've been involved in the subject of Hawaiian sovereignty as early as 1970, about 71, 72, when I was a member of the U.S. military, and I came across the book Hawaii's Story by Hawaii's Queen, which changed my whole perspective on the issue of American loyalty, because I had joined the military to serve during the Vietnam period to support my country, which I thought was the United States. So while at Hickam Air Force Base, I came across this book, and it spun me around completely. Previous to that, I had just graduated from the University of Hawaii with a political science degree. I served in the 1968 Constitutional Convention, went off to law school at George Washington University, couldn't put up with even a semester, ran out of money, wasn't used to snow. So I came back and joined the military. After reading Lili Okalani's book, I then read another book, and it's Lawrence Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S, on Hawaii Pono. And that got me so angry about what had happened to my country that I had plotted to kill Americans. I had plotted to blow up buildings and to try in every way to get the Americans out of Hawaii. So I was in a state of great anger at that time. I realized, however, that I would eventually get caught and I would not be able to make any change in the future for Hawaii, but just express anger about the past. So I decided that I would take a different approach. I would sneak into the system and explode the system from the inside. And to do that, I would need to get legitimacy from the inside. I decided, therefore, that I would attend law school, and the University of Hawaii, after I left the military, had just opened its first law school class, and I was fortunate to get in. Attended law school for 3 years, took the Hawaii State Bar Association test, and I got my law degree.
And can so I you tried, project your voice a little stronger?
Okay. So I tried to use that degree to do exactly that, to sneak into the system and start exploding it with truth, with history, with appropriate analysis. I was elected in 1982 to the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, on the banner of bringing Hawaii one step closer to Hawaiian independence. And so I was elected as trustee to represent the island of Oahu. Following that, in 1984, I had represented a number of court cases introducing the issue of Hawaiian sovereignty. In 1977, I represented the reputed underworld leader of Hawaii for a double murder, double kidnap case. And when he was charged with a double murder, double kidnap, I responded for him, of course, with his permission. And when they say, how do you plead, guilty or not guilty? I said, we refuse to dignify this court by entering a plea. We ask, who are the real criminals in this courtroom? We are not Americans, we are Hawaiian citizens, and your foreign laws do not apply to us. That was the first time, at least the first time in modern Hawaiian history, that plea had been entered. And while I was speaking to the judge who took the response, I was equally speaking to the media, who I needed to carry the word out to the public, because I see that the courts, half of it is an educational arena in which we need to use, especially when we cannot afford radio or television or newspapers at that time. And so I use the courts both in this state versus Pulava case, as well as in subsequent cases, both myself being attacked and attempted to take my license away. I represented a lot of the homeless. We called them beach people at that time, at Makua, and raised the issue of Hawaiian sovereignty and land ownership at San Island on Oahu and at many other places. So we kept banging the courts to get that attention and raising these issues, successful in most of the cases. But I became convinced that to ask a thief to sit in judgment of itself was not going to work for too long. and that what we really needed to do was to take our cause to an international perspective. I then joined an organization known as the World Council of Indigenous Peoples. Hello, are you there?
I am, and then the more you can keep your voice strong, the less I have to keep this potted up so hard.
Okay, I'll try to speak even louder, but not shout.
Okay, but that's better louder like that.
Okay, and so eventually I ended up representing the World Council of Indigenous People as an international advocate at the United Nations, at the International Labor Organization, and other international bodies struggling for indigenous people's rights in the international arena, which is somewhat separate from the Hawaiian sovereignty issue. And a lot of people get confused about, is this an indigenous claim or is this a national claim? The Hawaiian sovereignty issue is in essence a national claim in which part of the population are the native Hawaiians, are the indigenous people. So at times we need that clarity of understanding really what is a claim all about. Is it merely to uplift the indigenous people in this society, in this community, or in a new nation so that we can bring back the dignity of the indigenous people? Or is it to be free and separate from the United States? I think one way of making the comparison is to compare Martin Luther King with Mahatma Gandhi. Both of them spoke about rights of people. King spoke about civil rights, rights of people to be equal, to be respected, treated as equal within a civil society, so that the blacks or the Afro-Americans were treated equally as the whites and any other racial group. That's a civil right. That's a right within a society that considers itself civil. Gandhi, however, was talking about human rights. He was talking about the right of a people to be recognized as equal among other peoples, such as the people of India being recognized as equal among nations, among people of United States, of Britain, of France, and other countries. The cause for Hawaiian sovereignty is first and foremost a struggle for human rights. And that distinction has not been made sufficiently in the Hawaiian sovereignty discussion. So maybe I'm getting too far afield from a mere description of myself, but those are some of the backgrounds and my participation in the work of Hawaiian sovereignty. Most recently, I was involved in the what was called the Native Hawaiian vote. Some people call it AHO, the Ahahui Hawaii O'iwi, or the Native Hawaiian Convention.
And when was that?
And, well, it's still going on, and we were elected back in about 1998, 1999. And it was actually a result of a process. If I can just take a few minutes to explain the process. The process began back in 1993, after the 100th anniversary of the overthrow. The state government was very concerned about what to do about the question of Hawaiian sovereignty. And so they formed an organization or an entity called the Sovereignty Advisory Commission. There were nine people appointed. I was one of the nine appointed by the governor to advise the legislature about this whole thing called Hawaiian sovereignty. We prepared a report. We disclosed the illegalities of the Americans, the conspiracy that had occurred, and all the rest that many of us are now familiar with. We submitted it to the legislature, and essentially the legislator, who was chairman of the Hawaiian Affairs Committee in the Senate, refused to receive it. He said, how can I receive this when you say that in essence the whole shebang is illegal. And we said, well, you ask us to report. This is the report. The overthrow was illegal and everything. It's that whole idea of the fruit of the poisonous tree. If the tree is poisonous, the fruit is poisonous. And so the illegality of the overthrow, which has never been made legitimate, still exists. So anyway, he refused to accept it, shut down the Sovereignty Advisory Commission.
Now, can you, just for the listener who's less ma'a than you are, who is he one more time?
He was the senator who was the head of the Committee on Hawaiian Affairs.
For the U.S. government or for the
state
of Hawaii?
No, for the state of
Hawaii.
Okay. This was a state function. And Crozer, his last name was Crozer. He represented the Eva district. He's no longer in the legislature. So following that, the legislature about 2 years later, in about 96, I think, or 95, they said, look, we have to deal with the subject of Hawaiian sovereignty, so instead of this report, let us appoint a new body. The legislature will identify four or five organizations, and they will have representative on this body. The body shall be consist of 22 delegates. The other delegation shall be elected or shall be appointed by the governor based on nominations from Hawaiian organizations. So Hawaiian organizations nominated and John Waihei appointed the balance of the, or the remainder of these members of this Hawaiian Sovereignty Advisory Commission. I was appointed at that time as well.
So it sounds like they did a somewhat pono job of appointing people. That I know sometimes when commissions are appointed, mm-hmm. they just appoint people who agree with them and are like if
yeah.
they. So they wanted to take a serious look at it a second time?
Yes.
Okay.
In essence, to tell them how to address the issue of Hawaiian sovereignty. So this body met, coming from many, many different organizations and different points of views. And in essence, what we did was we reported to the legislature that we cannot advise the legislature because we are merely appointed by a state entity. If you really want to hear what to do with the Hawaiian people and how to address Hawaiian sovereignty, we needed to go out into the communities and speak to the Hawaiian community. So the legislature came back the next year, said, okay, do it. So we went out to every Hawaiian community we could identify and held hearings at these meetings. We even went off to America to hold these hearings. And basically, part of the hearing or part of the question is, what do we do and when do we do it? People generally said, we are sick and tired of others claiming to be our king, our queen, our regent temporary or pro tem, our kia aina or whatever you want to call them, because they are not legitimately elected or selected by us. They claim one excuse or another excuse. Either the genealogy is higher than someone else's genealogy, or they recognize this or that constitution, or they are in association with. Everyone has an excuse. But generally, the people were saying, we were never invited to the party that elected them or the family reunion that elected them. What we want is for all of our people to get together in a convention, or our leaders to get together in a convention to fight it out, to beef it out, and then present to the people what they propose as the direction for Hawaiian sovereignty. So when we ask how do we do that process, the result or the conclusion was that the communities should elect delegates from each of their communities. So that I ran from the Lualualea Valley community out in the Waianae district. You had people running from Makaha, from Nanakuli, from all of these various areas on the island of Kauai. They also elected their delegates through a public vote. Before we held that public vote, we went back to the legislature and we told the legislature, this is what we're hearing from the community. They're saying we are not legitimate. What we should do is have an election of the Hawaiian people or the native Hawaiian people. The legislature then said, okay, do that. What we will do is constitute a new group. We shall call that group the Native Hawaiian or the Hawaiian the Native Hawaiian Elections Commission, I think it was called. Merely to hold elections. I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. Before we even did that, we said, before we can commit to this decision made by the Hawaiian people, let's go out to the Hawaiian people and hold a vote. Hold a question. Should the Hawaiian people elect delegates to propose a Native Hawaiian form of governance? We went out, we held a vote. Who were qualified to vote in this election? We said, we are not a genealogical body.
So
we are trying to get this vote done. So if a person claims that he or she is of the Native Hawaiian blood, whatever amount it is.
Any quantum.
You can be in jail or jail. There's no one to say that your civil rights have been deprived because you committed an American crime. You can be a citizen of the U.S. You can be a citizen of Zimbabwe. You can be a citizen of Switzerland. Wherever you come from, all we're looking at is, can you trace your ancestry to be Native Hawaiian? If you can, register. Other people were saying, yeah, but what about the cheaters? And what we said was, we will print that list. And upon printing that list, anyone who is identified and is challenged will pull their name out and we will make a separate determination. But by and large, we believe that people were honest and they would list themselves if they were Native Hawaiian and if they wanted to participate.
So
there were some names that we pulled out, we tested it, and we found that they were valid, and then we put their names back in. Others said that, yeah, I signed it, but I made a mistake, I didn't understand it, but I support the Hawaiian sovereignty movement.
So the question I have here then is, it definitely is about an indigenous people with a bloodline more than a national group.
At this point, and I will talk about, well, what about the Hawaiian nationals? Later on. But just to show you how we did proceed, okay? And people were saying, yeah, but you are cutting out the Hawaiian nationals. And as to that, we were saying that's true. It's not the purest form, it's not the best form, but let's see how it works itself out. Because other people were saying, well, the Hawaiian nationals should not be included. We are only trying to define a bloodline if we are going to be part of the United States.
Okay,
so we said, let's not address that yet. Let's address that question in the convention.
Okay, and then I don't mean to be hurrying you along. I want to make sure that we have time for
sure.
A cross-dialogue with the people who are in here, because what I feel like I'm hearing, and I see that there is this Native Hawaiian convention still yet coming up, right?
Yes and no. And the reason is, it currently exists. It has not adjourned sine die.
So does what you're doing here with the Native Hawaiian Convention, which can be seen at www.nhconvention.org, so nhconvention.org, is this looking to create like a tribal people within the United States?
No. What it is, let me just finish one more of the process,
okay,
of how we were elected, and then I will address your question. After the people voted to adopt this process by which they will be able to elect delegates, and after that passed the majority, the vast majority of Hawaiians who voted, then we held an election of delegates, and we elected, I think it was 89 delegates from throughout Hawaii and the United States. And then we began meeting in convention. That convention has not concluded its work. that convention is making a proposal. It's making actually two proposals that we are working on. One we are proposing is a model of integration within the United States. The second is a proposal of independence from the United States. Now, the integrationist proposal limits the participants only to the people with
blood
the koko,
mm-hmm.
the native Hawaiians, the blood. For independence, what we are saying is that as we create an independent nation, on one hand, we still need to protect the integrity of the native Hawaiian people, the blood. But we have to recognize that the citizenry should be eligible to not only the blood, but those who can trace their Hawaiian nationality historically, as well as those who would have qualified for Hawaiian nationality had the Americans not interfered with our unfolding of self-determination. And so we have certain requirements for becoming citizens of the Hawaiian nation, and so we try to describe that process. Before we could finish our work and come out with these two proposals to place before the Hawaiian people, the state government as well as the Office of Hawaiian Affairs cut our funding. Then OHA went and decided that they would only play the game of pushing us into an integrationist approach, the Akaka Bill. Since that time, we have not been funded, we have not adjourned Sinai, and so we continue to exist, but we are unfunded. And so at the present time, there's no support. Now, the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is supporting really an interference in this process of concluding our promise to the people. And that interference is, let's have another listing of people who can vote, and let's hold another convention without allowing us to conclude our work and putting both options out to the people.
Mm.
What we, or at least what I'm saying, the convention isn't saying this, but I'm saying this, and I should point out that I'm also at the present time the chairperson of the Native Hawaiian Convention. I'm saying that we have been divided for too long between integration or independence. And it's that stupidity on our part as well to be using the wrong conjunction. As long as we stick with the or alternative, that you either pick independence or integration, we are slicing ourselves as a political body apart. We continue with this argument about protecting Native Hawaiian rights, protecting Kamehameha schools, protecting DHHL lands, protecting Queen Liliuokalani Trust, and all of the specialty rights that we have that is somewhat protected by the American laws, as well as scholarships and all that stuff. And we are saying we want to preserve that as if we are also saying at the same time that we don't want independence. Generally, our people are saying the other. They are saying, I want to protect that. I don't want to lose that for our people. But I also support independence. That an option has never been given to us. And so that game of divide and conquer is what we had been subjected to. And so what I'm proposing is that we start looking at that an option so that we can create a whole body of a whole political body that is not divided, saying, yes, we can support some recognition at the present time, but we are never giving up our right to independence. And so anyway, that's what I'm looking for. I'm sorry, did I fail to answer your
question? No, I think
question?
That was really good. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea Kauai Soapbox Live. This is Felicia speaking with Poka Laenui. Am I saying it right?
Sort of. It's Laenui.
Laenui.
No, yes.
Okay, thank you. Laenui. And then I want to bring in Keo and Jim to be able to ask you some questions and have some of this dialogue going back and forth, because Keo is from Anahola and James is from Wailua, and they both have been working tirelessly for decades on this, or a lifetime perhaps is a better way of saying it. So I would like them to ask you some questions rather than me.
Sure, go ahead. Aloha to both of you.
Aloha. Yeah. Aloha. Aloha. Poka, the years you was mentioning, I remember them well. Those were the years I was studying the civil rights reports that was coming out in that time. I believe it led up to the apology bill, all those
yes.
civil rights reports, and which you know, mentioned about the illegal overthrow and all the wrongs that was done to the Hawaiian, to the Kanaka people. I also believe all those conventions that you attended and that you weren't funded, it always ended up like that, that you guys start something and never did finish it, complete it.
Yeah.
And so I was really frustrated at that time. But I was glad to have the apology bill, because with that, it was something that our people can use. It was a tool to use and help us become independent because of all the crimes that was done. And because it's a law, you would think that it would have power. But it you only use it when you're talking with officials. And somehow, magically, it works when you talk to the officials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was real happy about that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, our independence is floundering, and we need to get back on track. And so my road to get back on track is to establish a Hawaiian constitution. And I believe that will cure all our problems. What do you think?
I think if we did that, it would cure much of the problems. You see, what you are speaking about is an end result. And the constitution that you are talking about is for an independent nation, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. What I am saying at this point is more the sacredness of the process, to treat everyone so that they have a voice in it. Because if we ice out anybody in this particular stage, then we're going to have division within our Hawaiian nation, which I support, but we're going to have division within our Hawaiian nation forever because we ice them out.
We're not icing anybody out. They can participate also.
Well, but the conclusion is already a Hawaiian independent nation.
Yeah.
There are people who do not support that. They support the integrationist approach. And I'm saying, let their voices be heard. Let every voice be heard so that when the conclusion is reached, which I'm hoping it will be independence, when the conclusion is reached, they cannot say, I was iced out. We listened to you. We presented your position to the Hawaiian people as well, and we told them, hey, vote. You like this way, or you like that way, or you like both ways, or you like nothing. We gave the people every bit of choice, and the majority has supported an independence movement. And so that's why I'm saying, let's regard the process as being sacred rather than my conclusion or your conclusion. And that's all I'm saying. I am convinced that if we put it that way, even those people who now support integration, and I know many of them, they also support independence, but they cannot see independence yet. They cannot feel, they cannot touch it. They don't know, they never saw that constitution yet, but they know that if the feds cut off one, let's say, scholarship for our Native Hawaiians or library services and all that stuff, they know how, that they're going to feel. You know, I'm in the service of mental health services. You get the money stopped flowing into our agency, our people are going to suffer. So people have different perspectives to it. I'm saying let everybody be heard and don't force the choice, because a human being is not only one way or the other way. A lot of our folks who are on Hawaiian Homes lands, they support the preservation of Hawaiian Homes. They don't want the feds to cut it off, but they also support independence. So let's not participate in dividing them. Let's say, come with us. We can support you to preserve all of these rights, but come, let's also support our independent nation. So what I'm saying is that we cannot continue with this I'm right, you wrong mentality anymore. We've got to pull the Hawaiians together. And it's so simple, just by being inclusive. You know, as they say, it's a kako thing. Not a Marco thing, yeah? It's all of us. We got to find a way to be together.
Okay, but, you know, Hawaiian Homes is a bad, it's a bad issue to bring up, because I live on Hawaiian Homes.
Yeah.
I can never own a title to my land.
You're right.
So you know, if that's the best that we can get, I mean, I'll go independence all day long.
Yeah, but in the meantime, what are you going to do? Get off, move off of your land, move your children off, move all of your neighbors off the land because you don't have title? Or are you going to stay on the land as long as you can, make the best use of it as you can, and continue to work for independence?
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, in the system, we have a lot of pilikia in the system, but that does not mean, okay, I cannot own the land in Hawaiian Homes, therefore we throw the program away. That's not the way to go. We have at least something in there. Let's beef it up, and let's not forget our independence.
James, do you have any thoughts?
I just, aloha, brother.
Yes, aye, aloha.
I just wanted to know about the United Nations declarations of the rights of indigenous people.
Yeah.
Are we included in that, or?
As indigenous people, we are included.
Okay.
The United States, the way they handle it is that they recognize it as being very important and should be applied to all indigenous people outside the United States. But when it comes to them, it's always, you know, we number one, and no, we're not hypocritical, we just number one. So as an example, we move it up to today and the hypocrisy of the United States. As they tell the Russians, yeah, hey, you cannot leave your military in Crimea when you take the vote in Crimea on being independent or staying with Ukraine. All they need to do is look back in 1959, and you know all the military who remained in Hawaii? While we had a vote for statehood or stay as a integrated nation within the United States as a territory.
Right.
And then not only that, but they had the goal to let the American military participate in voting in our elections.
That's right.
That's
the
American military mentality of, what is that, they are special in the world because God somehow gave them manifest destiny so that they can intervene in any country in South and Central America, but the Russians cannot intervene in Crimea, which is right along the Russian border.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find so many of that kind of fallacies. But that whole idea of American audacity is what you find in. They say, hey, what are you doing going into the Ukraine and affecting the politics in there when they did the same darn thing with Liliuokalani? The first regime change was in Hawaii, but they talked nothing about Hawaii.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, we can use it to the extent that we have the opportunity to use it, whether it's in the state legislature or in the courts or wherever we do it. We should use the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People.
Okay.
As well as the confession. They call it the Apology Resolution.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Poca.
Yes.
Would it be called a war crime, what's happening in Hawaii right now?
You know, if you do it, and the reason I hesitate to do it is because when you really look at war crimes, the kind of stuff that has occurred in Bosnia and all that other stuff.
Well, I'm just taking it from Field Manual 1027.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you will find that, yeah, if you wanted to be technical, you could. But you can water down the real impact of war crimes in terms of the kind of action. So for me, I wouldn't use it, but I can understand why other people are using it. You know, ethnocide is equivalent to genocide. When you take away a people's culture, when you damage their sacred funeral and burial articles and all that stuff, it hurts. So I'm not one to say, hey, don't use the term war crime if you want to use it.
Okay.
But I would not myself, because I've worked with so many different instances in which I have really seen other forms of war crimes, so that I wouldn't, to me, overuse that term, you know?
But I think we see some evidence of war crimes now. I mean, when I look at what's happening in the Mideast, you know, under our name, I cringe.
Oh, yeah. You know, the kind of killings that has been going on in Vietnam, the kind of killings in Central and South America by the, well, I won't name any of these organizations, many of them CIA supported, the kind of carpet bombing of Babylon, or what was the
Baghdad?
Name of the, what was the name of the Baghdad?
Baghdad.
You know, those are war crimes. Those are stuff that the Hawaiians did not go through, although they stole our nation just as well.
But they're not having drone strikes like in Yemen and
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, and thanks to Liliuokalani.
That's true.
Because, you know, she was not willing to, as she herself said, waste the blood of our Hawaiian citizens. And she had misplaced her trust in the United States and in President Cleveland, and not really misplaced her trust. Cleveland was in a awkward position. He was suffering from cancer. His bottom of his jaw was deteriorated or was removed. He was in very bad health. He had a bad Congress to work with. And yet you cannot excuse him for his failure to restore the nation and to recognize the provision, not the provisional, the Republic of Hawaii as the de facto government. You know, there's one more thing, and I'm sorry for taking up so much time, but there's one more point I'd like to mention, and perhaps you folks might find some agreement with it. Oftentimes we talk about ceded lands. We talk about the stolen lands. We talk about the waters. We talk about the minerals and the rest. I'd like to call attention to the fact that ceded lands came about when, what was his name? Sanford Dole, on 4th of July, 1894, walked down to the center stage of Iolani Palace and simply declared, from now on, we have a new government called the Republic of Hawaii. And in the Constitution of the Republic of Hawaii, all of the lands and all of the waters of the government of Hawaii and all of the crown lands now belong to the government of Hawaii. He took that and then he ceded it to the United States in the so-called treaty that never passed as a treaty by American law in 1897. Now, in the meantime, what he also did at that moment when he declared the Republic of Hawaii into effect was he said all of the Hawaiian citizens are automatically citizens of the Republic of Hawaii. And then in 1897, in that treaty, he gave even the citizens over to the United States as part of the cession of Hawaii to the United States. What we miss out is we talk about ceded lands, ceded assets. We are also ceded individuals. But we have a voice. The land does not have a voice. And we need to remind people that we never gave in. We never gave up. We never said that, yeah, we want to go with you. That there was never a vote in 1894 or any time after that to ask us if we wanted to lose our Hawaiian nationality. And yet the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that nationality cannot be arbitrarily taken away or given. And that's exactly what they did to us. So let us also remember that the human beings are also seated, and or what we can call stolen, and that's just as illegitimate as the taking of our lands.
Wow, that's nice. Thank you, Poca.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
How do you speak to that? I understand that the Hawaiian political system was different than the Native Americans because Hawaii had a constitutional monarchy that was set up during the time of contact that was seen as an allied nation to the United States. But I guess growing up in the Southwest, I'd like to speak to how you see what happened to the Native Americans, where there was really overt violence.
Mm-hmm.
And, beyond not recognition of who they were, you know, I like Russell Means. He's got a film out called Welcome to the Reservation, as really all of the United States citizens who are waking up are realizing we have almost all ceded our rights. And the more that people pay attention to the laws that are being written and passed quietly, maybe not implemented yet. We've lost so many of our freedoms, whether we are citizens of Hawaii or citizens of the United States. Certainly the Native Americans, hard for me to not acknowledge the challenge that they have gone through in this conversation.
Yeah, I think there are commonalities and there are significant differences between the two. As indigenous people, there is many, many commonalities. And in fact, I was visited by these Alaskan natives who are trying to form their own mental health and physical health system and as a foundation for creating their nation. The idea of indigenous peoples and how indigenous peoples become sort of just sucked in to the jurisdiction of a government is essentially based on land. If the indigenous people are found in this territory and the territory is claimed by this particular government, then they are the indigenous people of that government. If we step back and we take a look at the concept of slavery, what was the concept of slavery all about? It was saying that a human being can be demoted to nothing more than
property.
Mm-hmm. And if we say that property is more important than the humanity of all people, then we are engaging in slavery. So we have the international community as well as the United States who have spoken out identifying slavery as one of those few international crimes. It's a criminal act to commit slavery. Now, if we look at the indigenous people, what are we saying? We are saying that the indigenous people are attached to territories. And because of that attachment, then we treat them according to how we treat the property.
Like livestock or a land asset.
Right. And so they are second cousins to slavery. But we have not, created the analytical framework yet among enough indigenous people to put up that resistance. But that's one concept of the idea of indigenous people and what the inherent human rights should be. The situation between Hawaii and the Native Americans, whether they come from Alaska or the lower 48 or even Canada, is different because with the Hawaiians, we had a nation recognized in the international community as such. And, you know, many of us know the history. We had 99 consular and diplomatic posts around the world. We are a member of the first international organization, the Universal Postal Union. I think it was the second international organization, etc. The American Indians did not have the status of nationhood in that sense. One or two organizations or tribes or nations had treaties with Britain as well as with the United States. And so they try to elevate that as falling in the international body.
But
generally, that's not the case.
If we look at that, though, what we're saying as a humanity is when a people group adopts Western standards, that then somehow they are closer to human, like that there has been this progression towards human development that says, you know, driving a car and living in, a complex society is the natural progression of humanity, whereas living in alignment with nature is somehow a lesser piece. And so, like, I think in Hawaii, where they were really honored, they had their palace, they had electricity, everybody was literate, they walked around in beautiful dresses. They adopted a lot of the Western society, where these people that I grew up around, they didn't make that adaptation. They held on to their culture very, very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, somehow they are less human.
Yes and no. The Hawaiians, while they adopted, they were very adaptive. They were probably the most adaptive, and if you really ask why, it goes way back into some fundamental Hawaiian beliefs. You can call it even religious beliefs. One is that the goddess of time does not have backward and forward movement. Life, fluidity, stability, humanity all have back and forth, so negative and positive, yin-yang approaches. Time does not have that. And that means that as we move only ahead. We can look back, but we only move ahead. Warriors understand that. Kamehameha, for example, he was very quick to understand new technology. Who was that? Kalakaua, when he rebuilt the Iolani Palace, he built it with telephone, electricity in the palace, etc., etc. The Hawaiians had that facility to understand that things move forward at all times. And so we had that adaptability. You look at how quickly we adapted to the technology of literacy. In one generation, we became the most literate people in the world, and it was our adaptability to it. But even in literacy, what did we speak? We spoke the Hawaiian language. We read the Hawaiian text, and now we could share the chants on a very wide basis. So while we adopted the forms of modernity, we were able to incorporate the substance of our culture, of our tradition. So for other people looking at it, they can be fascinated. Wow, look, these folks can read, they can use a telephone and all that stuff before much of America. You know, I keep saying if Lilia Okalani tried to call the President of the United States when the Americans landed, but the White House didn't have a phone hooked up yet.
Yeah, it was a really interesting contrast and an amazing movement in the shortest window of time.
Yeah.
So it was a really incredible time.
And yet they hung on to, and that was what Kalakaua was talking about. Hang on to your culture, hang on to your tradition, hang on to your history, but don't be afraid of moving ahead in the world. And I think that was a very interesting complexity of the Native Hawaiians.
And so we need to see that same strength hold strong moving forward, because there is many, many core elements of this culture, our host culture, that are critical to, I think, long-term resilient survival to our Hawaii. We're approaching the top of the hour when we will have Jazz with John. I would like to give each of you three gentlemen a final thought. Perhaps I'll start with you, James. We're going to go around, then we'll hear the county council report. So you have about 2 minutes each to leave the listener with a thought for, I'll allow you to have whatever direction you want to say in aloha. So, James?
Aloha, brother.
Hey, aloha, James.
I just was mentioning that my expertise is mostly in the burial council,
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to make a burial council with the Kanaka Maoli people, because our state burial council, not disgrading them or anything, is not doing their job. So, you know, I just was wondering. So I'm very interested in about the EVs, mostly about the EVs.
Yeah.
You know, well, what is the right way to go about it? You know, the laws. You know, because the state is broken a lot of their own laws that they created under the Hawaii Revised Statutes, which is common law, and they're revising our laws, which is a common law, to make their own laws to fight against us guys that's saying that we cannot move on stone or we cannot, you know, protect our EVs that is actually being unearthed and moved, and now they want to move them to the island of Ko'olawe. You know, so...
Yeah.
So that's where my fight is, but I really admire your mana'o on what we were talking about today.
I'm going to make sure that you get his phone number so you guys can carry on this conversation further.
Thank you.
K.O.?
Yes. I'm all for supporting a Hawaiian constitution, and one of the reasons would be because of... direct democracy. Direct democracy in the Hawaiian government is when an official abuses his authority, he is judged by his peers and not by a court. That's what democracy, direct democracy is. An official is judged by his peers and then he's removed from office immediately. That's what direct democracy is. And so I'd like to see that here today, that we can get rid of all of our officials by using their own peers, by to get them out of office. Because we have a problem here in Kauai with that same,
yeah.
You know, where officials aren't listening to the law. And take the Fifth Amendment, and is still in office. So we need to change that.
Thank you, K.O. And Poca, 2 minutes.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for allowing me to speak with your audience and with James and with K.O. And I think rather, well, we need to pull together. And the only way we can pull together is not by insisting I right, you wrong, but instead saying this is my opinion, that is your opinion. But can we maintain a sense of aloha in our conversation?
Okay.
Once we kill aloha, then
it's all
no.
Yeah, it's
well,
gone.
I have been really honored to have all three of you here sharing your mana'o with the listeners in Kauai, because it's been excellent and I have learned a lot, and I really, really appreciate all of you.
Okay,
so mahalo. And this has been Kauai Soapbox Live with Felicia, K.O., James, and Jazz with John is up next, and that was Polka, and so we're going to hear the County Council report, and then it'll be on to Jazz with John.